You're listening to The Takeaway.
I'm Catherine Lanford. John Hockenberry is away. That, of course, is Michael Jackson. Now, from his obsession with plastic surgery to his legal and financial troubles, Michael Jackson did have his eccentricities. We've been asking people for their memories of Michael Jackson, what legacy they think he's going to leave. Not all of them are positive. Here's one of our listeners.
I just wanted to say that Michael Jackson's legacy is that he's pretty much a weirdo, pedophile, destructive member of society. I don't care what achievements he's made in entertainment.
That's one view, so we'd like to know, what's yours? What will Jackson be remembered for? His large body of work as a musical artist and performer? Or his latter-day eccentricities? You can tell us your thoughts at 877-8-MY-TAKE or go to mytake@thetakeaway.org. We're going to go now to John Pareles. He's the chief pop critic for the New York Times. He has a piece of analysis already out this morning. John, what is the legacy, hey, that is going to follow Michael Jackson as he eases on down that road?
Well, I think both of the things you mentioned, both the music and the personal freakishness, what I was saying in my story was that I think they were intertwined. I think people always saw that he was strange within his amazing musical skills, that there was always this surface of musical genius, and then within it was this frightened, strange oddball. And I think the combination of them was what made him so universally appealing.
Well, in fact, you talked about the paradox of his stardom. What is appealing about that kind of paradox?
Well, I think we all feel like misfits, speaking purely for myself. I think we all feel like we're alone and vulnerable somewhere. And Michael Jackson was, as a performer, he was superhuman. I saw, you know, his the spectacles he had, and you would see this person singing, dancing, doing all these amazing moves with total perfection. And you'd think that this person is... either you would think he was a robot or you would think he was an athlete. But he's always singing about fear. He's singing about fear in Thriller. He's singing about fear in Beat It. He's singing about how terrified and lonely he feels often. And that combination, if he was purely a robot, if he was purely perfect, he wouldn't be as interesting. I think the imperfection draws people to him. And he kept telling people how weird he was. I mean, his first solo album was called Off the Wall. It's not like he was hiding this particularly, but he was balancing it for the best albums of his career.
You mentioned the album Thriller. Talk about that as the before and after moment of his life.
Well, I mean, that was, he was already a star. Off the Wall was a success in standard pop terms. Millions of copies, hit singles, but Thriller was a new quantum level. Thriller was a new order of magnitude. Thriller had seven hit singles. It's the best-selling album of all time. It also reached everybody. It was very strategic in that he had a rock guitar on Beat It. He had Paul McCartney for old Beatles fans. He had Wannabe Startin' Something for people who wanted dance music. He really went out of his way to make it something for every format. He looked at the situation of radio and of other ways to promote music in the 80s, and he saw that everything was divided into formats. He gave something for every slot. And he drew together the pop audience for what was really its last hurrah before it fragmented again.
And it became as much of a burden as it was a triumph for him.
Well, definitely. I think that people think that music careers are supposed to be like companies, that you're supposed to make more profits than you did the last year. And Jackson, after Thriller came out, when he made Bad, I read articles where he had posted on the wall of his studio the words 100 million. In other words, that was going to be his goal, that he had to outdo Thriller. And that, of course, can make you crazy because you start thinking about, what can I do to get a bigger audience? Not where is my music, not what's coming out of me, but what can I do for someone else? And I think that's really tough for an artist.
You said that that made him crazy. There are, I think, people out there who would take that literally. And talk about the strains of his life that emerged later that, for some, will always color his legacy.
Well, horrible stuff. I mean, the accusations of pedophilia, the financial disaster, the plastic surgery that turned a really handsome guy into someone who looked stranger than anything. Obviously, this was not a, you know, happy-go-lucky personality. I never met him. I never interviewed him. So I couldn't tell you, you know, anything from personal experience, but just the public performance, it gave the public something to look at. And I think that's something that's part of a pop star's job is to be a public figure. The public figure he cut was not one that showed any kind of happiness or stability. But then you put him on a stage with his white socks and his white glove, and you get one of those tracks going, and he was amazing.
Talk about the place of anger in his work.
I think, that's interesting. I mean, anger came out later. Anger came out on Dangerous and History, the two albums where he really, you had the feeling he was almost cornered, snarling in his cave. History especially. He started History as one of those greatest hits albums that was going to have two extra new songs or a couple of extra new songs, standard, you know, make some money gambit. And apparently he went into the studio and just kept recording and recording until he had a whole album. But on that album are three songs, Tabloid Junkie, They Don't Care About Us, and DS, which seems to be about the prosecuting attorney in California, though it's changed for libel reasons. And it's just about how completely persecuted and angry he feels. And he's really lashing out. There was also a remix of some of the songs of History where he's just about screaming. I mean, finally, he cracks in that. And it's scary and kind of fascinating and almost more human than his more polished stuff. But it's also, it's really angry. And what he's angry at is the media who he's courted all his life. So it's a real paradox. The media helped make him, and he teased and played with and supplied the media with everything from music videos to, you know, pictures of him sleeping in his hyperbaric chamber. But then as they became more voracious and he became more reclusive, he turned on them and they turned on him.
All right. John Perales, I'm afraid that we're going to have to leave it there, but I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you.
John Perales, the chief pop critic for our partners, the New York Times.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.